Our Old Testament reading is 2 Samuel chapter 1, verses 1 through 12 and 17 through 27. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. After the death of Saul, David returned from striking down the Amalekites and stayed in Ziklag 2 days. On the third day, a man arrived from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and dust on his head. When he came to David, he fell to the ground to pay him honor. "Where have you come from?" David asked him. He answered, "I have escaped from the Israelite camp." "What happened?" David asked him. "Tell me." "The men fled from the battle," he replied. "Many of them fell and died, and Saul and his son Jonathan are dead." Then David said to the young man who brought him the report, "How do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead?" "I happened to be on Mount Gilboa," the young man said, "and there was Saul leaning on his spear with the chariots and their drivers in hot pursuit. When he turned around and saw me, he called out to me, and I said, 'What can I do?' He asked me, 'Who are you?' 'An Amalekite,' I answered. Then he said to me, 'Stand here by me and kill me. I'm in the throes of death, but I'm still alive.' So I stood beside him and killed him, because I knew that after he had fallen, he could not survive. And I took the crown that was on his head and the band on his arm, and I have brought them here to my lord." Then David and all the men with him took hold of their clothes and tore them. They mourned and wept and fasted till evening for Saul and his son Jonathan, and for the army of the Lord, and for the nation of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. David took up his lament concerning Saul and his son Jonathan, and he ordered that the people of Judah be taught this lament of the bow. It is written in the book of Jashar: "A gazelle lies slain on your heights, Israel. How the mighty have fallen. Tell it not in Gath. Proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon. Lest the daughters of the Philistines be glad. Lest the daughters of the uncircumcised rejoice. Mountains of Gilboa, may you have neither dew nor rain. May no showers fall on your terraced fields. For there the shield of the mighty was despised. The shield of Saul no longer rubbed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the flesh of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back. The sword of Saul did not return unsatisfied. Saul and Jonathan, in life they were loved and admired, and in death they were parted. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions. Daughters of Israel, weep for Saul, who clothed you in scarlet and finery, who adorned your garments with ornaments of gold. How the mighty have fallen in battle. Jonathan lies slain on your heights. I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. You were very dear to me. Your love for me was wonderful, more wonderful than that of a woman. How the mighty have fallen. The weapons of war have perished." This is the word of the Lord.
Our New Testament text is from John chapter 11, verses 17 through 37. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. When Jesus arrived at Bethany, he was told that Lazarus had already been in the grave for 4 days. Bethany was only a few miles down the road from Jerusalem, and many of the people had come to console Martha and Mary in their loss. When Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus told her, "Your brother will live again." "Yes," Martha said, "he will rise when everyone else rises at the last day." Jesus told her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. Everyone who believes in me and believes in me will never, ever die. Do you believe this, Martha?" "Yes, Lord," she told him. "I have always believed you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world from God." Then she returned to Mary. She called Mary aside from the mourners and told her, "The teacher is here and wants to see you." So Mary immediately went to him. Jesus had stayed outside the village at the place where Martha met him. When the people who were at the house consoling Mary saw her leave so hastily, they assumed she was going to Lazarus's grave to weep, so they followed her there. When Mary arrived and saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing with her, a deep anger welled up within him, and he was deeply troubled. "Where have you put him?" he asked them. They told him, "Lord, come and see." Then Jesus wept. The people who were standing nearby said, "See how much he loved him." But some said, "This man healed a blind man. Couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying?" This is the word of the Lord. As human beings, we tend not to like feeling grief. In fact, we call sadness a negative emotion, implying that in some way our lives would be better off without it. We will do all sorts of things to avoid feeling it. We try distraction. We try denial. We try bargaining. We try addiction. We will try just about anything to try to get past feeling something that hurts. This is one of the reasons I love these two stories, because they are two stories about people experiencing hurt and how deeply connected that is with love. The first story that Braden read is the story of David and Jonathan. And of course, we know most of the beginning of that story, that David and Jonathan are incredible friends. Theirs is a friendship that should not exist because they are rivals. David has been anointed king, and yet Jonathan is also the future king. But instead of fighting and seeing each other as threats, they see each other as human beings, as people who are incredible gifts to the other. They promise to care for each other forever. It's a pretty incredible promise. But of course, what we see is that translating to incredible grief, right? When David finds out that Jonathan has been killed, he falls apart. He tears his clothes. He writes this beautiful lament and song, "Oh, Jonathan, how the mighty have fallen." We see him hurting, weeping. If he and Jonathan had not been close friends, if David had not loved Jonathan the way that David had loved Jonathan, Jonathan's death wouldn't have hurt. This is the problem with our modern view of sadness and grief. If we think grief is something that is bad and should be avoided, the only way of avoiding grief in our world is not to love. Grief is very much an aspect of what love looks like. And I love that we have a picture of Jesus grieving. The story of Lazarus is, again, one of love. Jesus and Lazarus are friends. They care about each other. They spend time together. They know what's going on in each other's lives. And one day, as tends to happen with us human beings, Lazarus dies. Jesus takes his disciples back there and apparently knows what he's going to do, right? Even in the few verses before what I read here this morning, Jesus says, "This is a sickness. He's asleep. We're going back to wake him up. And his disciples are like, great, if he's sleeping, he's fine, he'll get better. And Jesus is like, no, guys, he's dead. But I'm glad I wasn't there because you're going to get to see something even more incredible. And Jesus goes back then apparently knowing that resurrection is coming, right? He talks to Martha. Martha comes out and says, Lord, if you'd have been here, my brother wouldn't be dead. I love that this is part of the story too, because when we lose somebody we love, this is exactly where we all go with God too, right? God, if you loved me, how could you let this happen? You're powerful enough to stop it, so why didn't you? It's the same question Mary asks when she comes out. Lord, if you would have, why weren't you here? If you actually loved him, wouldn't you have stopped this? Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. Your brother will live again. And then it is after this, knowing that resurrection is coming, Jesus goes and sees the tomb. Let me read these words again because they're pretty incredible, especially given the context, especially given, I mean, we could say to Jesus, it's going to be all right. You're about to raise him from the dead. Don't cry. It's going to be fine in the end. Jesus seeing the tomb, seeing the mourners, it says, a deep anger welled up within him, and he was deeply troubled at the core of his soul. And the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. He experienced grief, sadness, at this loss, at a loss that was temporary, right? He's about to resurrect Lazarus from the dead. He knows he is the resurrection and the life, and yet Jesus experiences this grief anyway. He weeps and he mourns because grief is what love looks like. Grief is not something separate from love. We only grieve that which we love. Jesus wept. And the people around him said, see how much he loved him. Grief is not something separate from love. Grief is very much one of the facets of what love looks like in our lives. And if we want to live well, we want to be the kind of people who love deeply. And if we love deeply in this world where death is a part of it, we are going to experience grief and loss. And I so deeply believe it is worth loving anyway. To quote the band Nazareth from 1976, love hurts. Love burns. Love scars. Love wounds and marks. Any heart not tough or strong enough to take a lot of pain. Love is like a cloud. It holds a lot of rain. Love hurts. Classic 70s rock. You're welcome. But they are onto something. We cannot love and keep our hearts safe. But our hearts weren't made for keeping safe. Our hearts were made for loving. And when we do this incredibly courageous act of being willing to connect ourselves more deeply with the people around us. This is what love is, recognizing that we belong to each other, that we are one, that these other human beings are a part of who we are and we are a part of who they are. And when we do this, we are exposing ourselves to hurt. And this is a beautiful, wonderful thing. Love is willing to hurt. It has to be. There's no other kind here on this planet. I love the Alfred Lord Tennyson poem. I hold it true, whatever befall. I feel it when I sorrow most. 'Tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. This is what we're doing here. When we love, when we live our lives well, we are going to love deeply. And when we love deeply, we are going to grieve deeply. And that is okay. Maybe it's even good. Grief is just love. Grief is a sign that we are loving deeply. I'd like for you to take three things from these two stories today. One is that you would give yourself permission to feel grief. Jesus here gets angry. Jesus is sad. Jesus weeps. Jesus experiences these emotions. There is nothing wrong with them. They are God-given. You, and not only that, they are healthy. This is what a healthy love looks like, is a love that is willing to experience hurt. Of course you should miss the people that you love when they're not with you. To not miss them would be something wrong. Their lives are always going to be an important part of who you are and who you will become. Grief is not something you should get over, because their life is always going to be part of yours. Your life is always going to be part of theirs. That is never something that should be done with. When you think about that person who will always be part of you, you are always going to miss them until you are reunited. Grief is not something you need to be done with. Tell your heart that it's okay. Number two. Love remembers. Continue cherishing the memory of those who have made a difference in your life, of those you have been close to. We remember the good. I love A.A. Milne said, "What a wonderful thing. How lucky I am to have something so hard to say goodbye to." The fact that you're grieving means you had something good. You have something good. They're not gone. They are still a part of who you are. As we cherish the memory of the people we've loved, they remain part of who we are to this day. Their love keeps on giving and remains present in our lives as we remember them. Our love for them and their love for us, in fact, inspire us to action so much in the present. By the way, inspire literally means to fill with spirit. To breathe in, to be filled with that love that was present in them and remains present in us. I love the follow-up to this story of Jonathan and David, right? You know, standard practice in ancient times was, when you became king, what did you do with any threats to the throne? Yeah, kill them all, right? Make sure there's nobody else who could have a potential claim to the throne. That's what everybody did. Do you know what David does after he becomes king? I'm going to find this. 2 Samuel 9. This is what love looks like. This is what healthy grief looks like. 2 Samuel 9, David asked, "Is anyone in Saul's family still alive? Anyone to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" He summoned a man named Ziba, and Ziba tells him, "Yes, Saul has a grandchild, Mephibosheth." David says, "Get him, bring him here." The man goes, finds him, brings him back. Mephibosheth has got to be terrified at this point, right? I just got called into the king's presence. He's about to lop my head off. Instead, David restores all of Saul's lands to Mephibosheth, says, "These are yours and your descendants forever. Not only that, but I want you here with me at my table, because I loved your uncle so much. You belong here with me." When we cherish the memory of the people who've loved us, it inspires us to action in the present. They remain part of our lives as we love and give and pay forward all of that love that we have received and that has been given to us. Healthy grief inspires us to incredibly positive action in the present. This is what it means to honor those who have gone before. To remember their love for us makes us more willing to pass on that love to the people around us. My grandma died a year ago. She was a lady who was she was incredible. One of the most courageous human beings I've ever met. And that courage is something that inspires me now. When I think about her and how she lived and what she did, I know those genes are running around in my body too. That blood is pumping in my veins. And seeing the courage with which she lived inspires me to be able to live my life with courage, to be able to love in the face of loss. Those who have loved us continue giving to us as we cherish their memory. Third thing, these stories don't end in loss. They end with hope. Jesus says to Martha, "I am the resurrection and the life." That everyone who dies is going to live again. That this death is something temporary. For Lazarus, it was 4 days, and he gets called forth. But of course, where is Lazarus? He's dead again. All of us, are even the people Jesus raised from the dead, died. It's where we're headed. But that's not the end of the story. According to Jesus, all of that death is asleep. There is going to come a morning, a resurrection, when we are restored, when we are restored to each other, to those we love, to those we care about. We can live in the hope of that restoration now. When we face death, when we face the grief of those that we care about deeply, we can remember that life wins, that love wins, that the grief is temporary and that the joy is eternal. Weeping may last for a night, but joy comes in the morning. And that there's part of us and those we love that never dies, that remains in God, that is kept and will be restored. And this means we do not have to be afraid. We do not have to be afraid of the death of those we love. We do not have to be afraid of our own death, because it sure looks like God is more powerful than even death. There's a quote that I've been sitting on for the last year, and it's profound, and I love it, and I would love to leave it with you this morning. It is from Khalil Gibran, and he said, "The deeper sadness carves into your being, the more joy you can contain." What if you changed the way that you look at grief? And instead of seeing it as something negative to be gotten rid of and avoided, you saw it as the presence of love in an uncertain world. What if we welcomed grief in as a recognition of love? That this hurt is indeed expanding our souls and our lives and our capacity to be present with all the things that are wonderful and good. What if we recognize that grief and grieving well is just another side of loving well? It is part of this remembrance that we do together today. This is our Memorial Sabbath, where we stop and remember the people who we've lost as part of our church family, remembering that they will always be part of who we are. We invite you to come forward and light a candle in honor of the person you've loved. I will read the name, and then